You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Welcome. Welcome to The Dice Men Cometh. It is episode 199, woo-hoo, believe it or not.
So close.
It is the 1st of February, so we've got that hot summer weather out of the way in January. And you are joined by Garth and Mark and Leon, who, between us, we make up The Dice Men Cometh, don't we, lads?
And look, for those people who haven't listened before, we're a radio show and podcast talking about board games, card games, role-playing games, all sorts of tabletop experiences you can have with your friends, or if that way inclined, your enemies.
Correct.
Come in handy.
Yeah, and tonight we're going to talk about some more of those games, including
the game that we have been playing, maybe not so lately, but we haven't talked about it yet, so we probably should.
Oh, definitely worth talking about.
We will then have a little bit of news on why we weren't able to get to CanCon.
Yes.
And then, Mark, you've got more Kickstarter for us.
Kickstarter has really kickstarted the year with a whole bunch of stuff, so I'm going to talk more about that. Little bit of news.
Yep.
And we might even tease a little bit about what's coming up next week.
Ooh. You mean on episode 2?
Episode double century.
When we pass go.
I got it in first.
All right. Now, look, guys. Normally, I love Hobart.
Oh.
Normally, I do. Mm. Now, this is incredibly niche and no one who's listening will care. Cool. But I've realised in the last 2 or 3 days that Hobart drivers are really, really bad and really can't read well, because just around the corner from my house, there are maybe 4 or 5 signs that tell oncoming drivers that a road is about to be closed. And for us locals, I'm talking Mellifont Street.
Yeah.
Drivers go past the first sign that says the road's closed. They then go past the second sign that says detour. They then pass the third sign that says local traffic only, road closed. They then pass the fourth sign that says that. And then they try and swerve past this road closed bollard. Get to the top of Mellifont Street, which is arguably the steepest street in the world.
It is the steepest street in Tasmania, I believe.
And get stuck, not able to do a U-turn or anything. And I watched this from my home going, I've lost a little bit of faith in humanity. But anyway, this hour we will restore that, because all of our listeners are geniuses. And everyone who listens surely knows how to drive or take correct public transport. So look, let's go to a song. Before that, though, we do have to say thanks, Area 52.
Oh, yes.
Can't believe you guys forgot that.
Post-Christmas shopping. I think the Boxing Day sales are continue on into January and now February.
Well, it must be almost Easter sale time.
February.
So anyway, thanks, Area 52. Spend your money there. We're going to go and have a song, and then Leon is going to tease us with the game that we haven't played lately, but oh boy, did we play. You with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
You're with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Another show tonight brought to you by Area 52, our fabulous, friendly local gaming store. Now, that track was by the Beautiful Girls. It was called Royalty. Now, I'm not sure why that track is relevant, Leon.
Right. I'll probably tell you, won't I? Seamless. We are just so good at this.
Hey, we're professional.
We are indeed. You are a member of a noble family vying for supremacy of Europe. Place those who are most trusted to you into the positions of influence while eliminating your opponent. It is time to show your power. After all, you and your family are royals.
Royals! Oh.
Yes.
You can call me Queen Bee.
Okay. It's better than most of the names I normally call you.
That's true, actually.
So we are talking about the game Royals from Arcane Wonders, and it is now a part of the Dice Tower Essential line, because about 2 years after it came out, it got a bit of a facelift, where the game is pretty much the same, but it got nicer art, which was designed by
The art was done by Jason Engel, who's done a whole heap of D&D stuff.
Yes.
All of the D&D board games. He did all the character art for them. And the other artist was Michael Menzel, who we talked about a while back. He did Legends of Andor, the game, but he's very famous for producing some of the most beautiful board game art on the actual boards. Things like Pillars of the Earth, that are just those amazing Euro games. He is well known for all those, and he's done that on this board.
Did you see that Legend of Andor is getting an expansion soon?
Another one?
Yes, which I believe, because it's a co-op game, isn't it?
Yes.
It makes it a, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm doing the stabby notion. Competitive.
It makes it backstabby.
It's all dark elves and stuff. Anyway.
But the art is pretty, but it's more about the designer.
Exactly, because the designer is one of those Aussies we like to go on about quite a bit, Mr. Peter Hawes.
Yes.
Who, of Terrassic Terror and Francis Drake fame. Mm. So the game came out originally in 2014 and was nominated in 2015, along with Francis Drake, for the Game of the Year.
Woo!
But it lost. And what did it lose to? What's the game we'd like to get you to pronounce, Garth?
Carcassonne?
No. Sushi Go. or the real way you pronounce it, which is...
Sushi Go.
That's the way. Good on you. So it lost to that, which, you know, it's a great game, sure, but that's a bit...
Yeah.
Those two games like this, so well designed.
Comparing them is like comparing Sushi Go to Royals.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Anyway, so the game is actually a newer version of the Peter Hall's original game called Head of State, which they did with Z-Man back in 2008, all those years ago, before board gaming was even a thing.
Yeah.
And this show wasn't even around yet, so how would you have known what to play?
Exactly.
So, Royals. It is a strategy game of intrigue and power for 2 to 5 aspiring nobles. The players are the leaders of the great noble houses of the 17th century, fighting for the supremacy over Europe. With the help of country cards, they place their nobles in cities of their choice, earning victory points. The higher the rank of the noble, the more country cards are required. So it's a set playing collecting kind of game, similar to A Ticket to Ride, which we've talked about a lot, and Ethnos, which we talked about recently. Very, very similar. And you are vying for control of Spain, France, Britain, and the German states.
Sounds exciting.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes. 17th century Europe, you say.
Yes.
Cubes? Cubes? Does it have cubes?
It has many a cube.
Cubes.
But it has a nice-looking board and it has nice-looking cards, so it's not all bland and browns and stuff. Oh, there's brown.
There's a bit of brown.
There's a bit of brown there, but there's other pretty colours as well. Anyway, so the way that it works, so the country cards that I said, you use that to spread influence onto the cities. So on your turn, all you're going to be doing is you're going to be grabbing 3 cards from either the row in front of you or the deck of those country cards, or you can take one of the country cards and one intrigue card.
Or like intrigue cards, depending on the game I'm playing and who I'm playing it with. I'm looking at you two.
Yes, exactly. So I'll bring up the intrigue cards in a little bit. But yeah, so basically you're trying to occupy all the influential positions and obtain bonuses in the form of victory points by playing country cards to place a wooden noble on a vacant wooden noble portrait in the city. The higher rank of the noble associated with the position, the more country cards are required. So again, you need the bigger sets.
Mm-hmm.
There can never be more than one wooden noble on each noble portrait, but nobles can be vanquished through the play of these intrigue cards.
I sure can.
So in the game, you're playing all the different kinds of nobles you're trying to... There's dukes, there's barons, there's princesses and all those kind of jazz. There's also kings.
Are there lords in Royals?
I don't think there is, actually.
Oh, what? Peter Hawes, what have you done?
Well,
or not done.
He designed a game before that was a famous thing. Actually, no, it wasn't, technically, because that song we just discovered was 2013, and this is...
But he designed the first version.
But it wasn't called Royals, was it? It was Head of State.
Yeah, that's another song by Lord.
Really?
No.
I was going to say, she was, what, 2 when that game first came out? Anyway, let's move on, shall we? So anyway, with the king, so when you're playing these intrigue cards, normally you have to just play the one. In the king's case, you have to play 2. So you have to play 2 intrigue cards with a matching coat of arms of that country to take over a king.
And look, it's pretty straightforward that on your turn, as you say, Leon, you draw some cards and you play just a set. Now, they've all got to be the same colour.
Yep.
And you've just got to play enough, because the board will tell you you need to play at least this many red cards to take over this particular square in Britain. But you've also got the luxury of just playing 3 random cards, which will equal one of the colour that you need as well. So you can sort of always come up with a joker should you need it.
Well, we talked about this with Ethnos, how you're, with Ethnos, once you've used up those cards that your competitors had to throw out, you're just drawing a top deck. Top deck card and hoping to get one. Well, in this, you don't have any choice. You're always just taking the top deck card, aren't you?
No. There's three face up at all times.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, but most of the time I've found they're not the three that you want.
Yes, of course.
Yes, because when you play, say, a Ticket to Ride, there's, what, five or six cards out there.
Five.
And Ethnos, if somebody's just got rid of a big hand, there's heaps of cards out there. But in this one, it's only three. And I think we did discover by playing it, they're never the bloody three that you need, are they?
Right.
But they are nice looking cards. So anyway, so what you can do is, like I said, use these cards and you can assassinate people's nobles. And when you do that, you move them across to the cathedral, which means that some of the abilities will still kind of work, but not completely.
No.
So the game is played over three rounds, and the way it will work is that you will score based on the nobles you have in each city, as well as a certain person that has the most influence in an entire country for the four different countries. And then there's the characters on the side, which every time you place a noble and you become the owner of that noble, you place a cube on them. So
and they're all various royals.
Yes, indeed. That's where your duke, your princess, your whatever else. And at the end of the game, those cards, the person that has the most on them...
So whoever's the biggest princess, they get some points.
They get the big old victory points. Because as I said, the game only goes for three rounds. Every round you're scoring these countries and cities, and then the final one, you do that as well as scoring those royals on the site. And that's all there is. There's no more after that, and that's where all your victory points come from.
Was there one more where if you get a set of each of the royals, they're those purple circles
If you are the first player to get one cube on every single royal on the side.
Like a whole set.
Correct. You'll get the, I think, 16 victory points or something, and then the second player to do it gets less.
There's a heap of different scoring options, and even as you said, you get sort of first and second for going into the countries. It's one of those ones where there's so many ways to get points, but it's so clever and tight.
Yeah, because those royals that are on the side of the board that I said you've got the cubes on, at the end of the game, if somebody is tied for them, as opposed to us just going, okay, you get 8 points, you get 8 points, those cards actually physically split in half.
I love that.
Yeah.
And you can give like half a token to each person. It's something so small and so stupid, but it is...
It's awesome.
It is a brilliant thing to do to take that little jigsaw puzzle of two pieces apart.
Because
your
board scoring elements all have a little token tile thing.
Yep.
And so by doing that where they split, you've got a token or a tile for everything. It makes it so easy to add up your points at the end of the game.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it. What we've just explained, that is the entire game and how it plays.
Yes.
So now,
you haven't explained is how damn fighty this game is, I guess.
Yes, there is definitely a bit of competitiveness.
Who would have thought that in 17th century Europe, people would be vying for power and screwing over each other?
Yeah, but the one thing I do need to say about this, and it is quite a common opinion with this game, is that when you guys got this it was PAX we played this, so it was a while ago, let's not muck around. When you guys put this on the table and said we're going to play this, and we played this with Alex, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
From TGA. So we put it down and I saw it and I went, oh no.
That's right, you're about to walk away.
I was like, this is not going to be Leon's thing, is it?
You had flashbacks to 12 months previously where you'd done the same thing with terraforming Mars. Yeah.
But that was for a different reason. This was
similar
more
the shade of brown.
This was more the theme, and I saw it and went, oh, this game is going to be bland and whatever. And apparently, and a lot of people do think that, even though the art is nice, it is that, it's almost the trading in the Mediterranean kind of generic type of theme.
Correct.
For a Euro game. However, 20 minutes into the game, I was thinking, this game is awesome. This is a game I would happily own. This is really good. And apparently, nearly everybody has that opinion about this game. Once they get it to the table and get it played, they go, ooh, this is actually really good.
It's almost, and harkening back to Ethnos again, because there are a few things to compare.
Yeah.
It's almost the opposite response, where with Ethnos, you're looking at those creatures going, oh, it's going to be creatures fighting and it's going to be epic, and then it's just collecting cards.
Yeah, pretty
much. This is almost the total opposite, where it's like, okay, it's a bland Euro game with bland cubes and whatever, but the action is so much more fighty, backstabby, jump in and then you'll jump in. But no, I've got that princess, and now you take that princess off me. And
the four of us learnt and played this in about an hour in a big, crowded board gaming environment.
Correct.
We had no trouble getting our heads wrapped around this and had much, 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 much fun. And as you said, as this game ramped up near the end, there was much cutthroatiness to it.
There was.
Another thing that a lot of people have mentioned, that it is basically, imagine a version of Ticket to Ride where you could blow up other people's trains instead of going, oh, you took that track, all darn you. What if you could just blow it up and take it back. So that's you add that. That is pretty much how you play this game.
I don't understand that reference.
No, you
I
don't
play Ticket to Ride
because you're a bad person.
Look, I just think you know, start them on Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
Then get them on Ethnos, and then get them on this.
No, don't include Ethnos.
Will be, whoever you're playing with will be totally hooked on Euro games.
But any, you can do that either which way. But if yeah, if someone plays Ticket and then plays this, they'll go, oh, okay, I get this. And it's not, it's really no more complicated. It just looks a bit more, it looks more complicated, but it really ain't.
Well,
just,
I kind of, sorry, no, Mark, right, yeah. I kind of think this is the introductory game to the wonders of Peter Hoare's games. Because he makes damn fine games.
Yep.
All of them have the method of three, which is there's three rounds, there's three cards that you're going to be collecting, there's multiple different ways you can score points. But if you can play Royals, which we were able to do and learn and win, or at least we all lost and Alex won, within the space of an hour, you could then easily move on to Triassic Terror, which is dinosaurs, and you get real plastic dinosaurs and little wooden dinosaurs to play around. And I have, and we haven't played it probably in 3 years. And then move on to Francis Drake. And those three games are all fantastic. Francis Drake's probably considered the best one from him, I think, probably recent
history.
Certainly
most well-known, and I guess it appeals more to those Eurogame sensibilities than maybe Triassic Terror does.
But Francis Drake is very similar in my mind space. The same thing, when you put Francis Drake in front of me, I thought the theme was a bit more interesting, the kind of exploring, but I thought, oh, this is going to be a bit bland, I'm not going to like it. And it was the same thing. 20 minutes in, I've gone, no, this is actually really good.
Yeah. So, you've got that race to collect all your stuff before you jump on your ship and sail off.
I think... And this is me looking in the foggy sands of history. Peter Hoare's might have been the very first interview that the Dice Men Cometh had.
Ooh.
Now, I think it must have been Trent who interviewed him.
Yes.
And he talked about Royals as his potential Spiel des Jahres game that he was trying to get in there and sort of, you know, see if he could do it a little bit well with that. Didn't happen, of course, but it's still a bloody good game.
Yeah, this game should be, I believe, I think I've mentioned it before briefly, it should be much more widespread in our hobby, I think. Because, like I said, you bring up your Ticket to Rides. Now, even something like Ethnos, this game is probably, you know, even at the height of its popularity when it first came out, not spoke of as highly as Ethnos is now, and it's a better game than
damn
that.
Damn right it is.
Yeah, and it's not that expensive, really, in the grand scheme of things.
It's obviously been picked to go into the Dice Tower Essentials range for a reason, because clearly those people think that this is something that almost everyone should have in their collection.
The reason was for that, I found out, is the same thing, is that those guys played it and went, this game is really good, but the box for even the original version looked even blander, and they just went, ugh. So that's why it's got the new nice art, things a bit more colourful, and that's why it's a part of that range, and it's hopefully going to be easily more readily available to people, and it's worth giving a crack.
And this would certainly be a stepping stone to, now, you guys maybe have not heard of Louis the 14th.
Yeah, he was a wonderful fact that guy.
I've heard of
a
man.
Some king dude in France.
Yeah.
But the Euro game Louis the 14th, which is one of the first ones I ever played way back in the
during the reign
times.
Of Louis the 15th.
That's right. You know, with royalty and kings and influence and things like that. But this sets up so many things that lead into other heavier Euro games, whether it's, you know, area of influence or whether it's card sets and cubes and all that stuff. It just takes you down a path from which you may never return, because there's so many great games.
Yes. Well, when you add in area control, set collection, hand management, and a whole bunch of screwing each other over. What a great combination to fit into an hour.
Yeah, it's pretty much our kind of game, basically. It's just, it doesn't have enough, you know, Vikings and violence on there for my liking.
It doesn't
have
enough minis for you, does it?
No.
It has cubes.
It could, though.
And clearly it's a game that does benefit from repeat plays, because Alex of the TGDA and of Red Genie Games, you know, who clearly had played it a couple of times, did clean the board with us pretty much, which you don't know.
Had he played it?
Until add up all those tokens at the end of the game, and he solidly
dominated the Royals. He really put a focus on those end-game scoring points. And look, this is where the game it encourages you to get rid of cards quickly and try and get some quick, easy points. But really, the benefit is extending your hand and holding all those delicious cards for as long as you can to get as many kings and queens and royals.
Yeah, this was one of those games where a little Leon thought, "Well, I've got a punt at winning this."
Oh,
little did he know when the scoring came about, he was wrong. But he enjoyed himself nonetheless.
Fantastic. So that was Royals by Peter Hawes. We all really loved it when we played it, not quite this week, but in October. So we are the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thank you to Area 52 for sponsoring us as always. And we will be back after this song with the wedding of the century, I hear you say.
Oh, yes. Speaking of royal weddings.
I tell you what, we'll be back in a moment.
That was Chook Race with Hard to Clean here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Now, there's a theme for a game that hasn't been explored, a chook race. We've had camels racing, mm-hmm. We've had bicycles racing, we've had a hare and a tortoise racing, apparently, in ancient times.
Yes. Ancient times?
Yeah, like Aesop's fable, wasn't it, where the hare and the tortoise first raced?
Yeah, it certainly wasn't made up.
No. A chook race. Anyway, we've been speaking about royalty now, Garth.
Yes.
We've got the Gamer Royalty Wedding of the Century,
yes,
I believe.
We are not talking Prince Harry and Meghan? Markle? Whoever
yeah, sure.
she is. I'm
yep.
such a monarchist. I love the royal family.
Yes.
So, look, over the weekend, it's pretty clear to say that there were only two places in Australia you had to be.
If you're a gamer.
One was CanCon.
And most of them were there.
Shut up.
Yeah.
We weren't there. CanCon, we're over it.
Yeah.
It certainly doesn't really, really hurt that we weren't there.
Yeah, all those photos, it looked utterly miserable.
Yeah, I mean, all that amazing fun.
With all
fun.
Their upside down frowns, what were they doing?
So anyway, the rest of us.
Us three.
We got to be at the board gaming wedding of the year.
Yes.
Now, we don't get to say that very often because board gaming wedding of the year,
because it's a weird thing to
probably,
say.
Yeah, it's not something that comes up in normal everyday conversation. But the very reason that we couldn't go to CanCon is great friends of all of ours and friends of the show.
Yes.
Oren and Georgie, these two little kids that could, finally tied the knot in a beautiful ceremony at the Tasmanian Golf Course, Golf Club, Golf something or other.
Yeah.
And we were all there in certain respective roles. Mark, you were there as just someone who ate their food and drank their alcohol.
Yes, I like to fulfill that role at weddings.
Yes, you did that exceptionally well. You also were quite sweaty, which was quite nice. And we'll get to that. Leon,
yes.
You had the usher role,
which was
the get everyone from where they are to wherever they need to be and then back again in time for the right photo.
That
or the
was
right
the first
this,
time
the
I've
right that.
Ever been at a wedding with a bouncer. You were a fair dinkum bouncer.
That was the idea. Who's the roughest person they know, looks-wise, which is me somehow. That just goes to show you how tough the board gaming community is when I'm the toughest looking guy.
I think a lot of weddings could do with a bouncer, actually.
Yeah.
And then there was me. You had to do a few little speaking roles here and there. And look, let's just set the scene. So we've talked about Georgie and Oren over the years in various, you know, guises because we do play games with them.
Best couple name ever.
I reckon because mush them together and you get orgy.
Yes.
Which, very proud to say, we all refrained from saying in front of their family and friends on Saturday. So well done, guys. Now, Mark.
Yes.
How the hell did they meet?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Garth, as many people did on the night. So another good friend of the show, Carl. He worked with young Oren in the IT department of some Tasmanian government.
So they'd already established themselves as nerds.
Yes, that's right. So they were friends. And Carl, of course, he's my longtime friend, one of the founders of the Hobart Gaming Society. And we did start up a certain Wednesday night gaming at the West End Pump House.
Yes.
A salubrious establishment in the city that, because it was winter, they weren't really attracting any crowds. They decided to put on, I think it was like $5 or $6 long necks.
$5 long necks, because
right.
I remember coming to a couple.
And so we started having these board game nights on a Wednesday night at the Pump House. And one of those nights, Carl brought along Oren to introduce him to friends and get him involved in gaming. Now, At the same time, maybe a couple of weeks earlier, perhaps, young Georgie and another friend of hers, whose name I don't remember because she doesn't really figure into the rest of the story, had heard about these awesome board game nights, or maybe even just stumbled into the West End Pump House and started playing games and joined the group. So when Carl brought young Oren along and Oren met the people in the board gaming group, he also met young Georgie. He was quite taken with her. We heard the story at the wedding of how he tried to sort of communicate with her on the social medias like the young peoples do and failed miserably and, you know, thought she's not interested.
Well, was Tinder a thing back then?
No.
I was saying, Facebook is the reason why I married my wife.
Wow.
We'd met once before and was like, yeah, it was like, she's nice, he's nice, but then kind of didn't think twice about it. And then got to be closer over Facebook like a year later. And here we are today.
There you
found
go.
Found each other through emojis.
Yeah, mate.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So, yeah, so Georgie and Oren, then they communicated over Facebooks, went on a date somewhere, and the rest is history.
Lo and behold, they ended up getting married in front of 70 of their nearest and dearest.
Yep. And three of us.
Exactly right. But the thing that struck me is that this was a board gaming wedding.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Now, Leon and I, in part of our responsibility, got there set up. We had to set up a gaming table.
Yep.
How many weddings do you have to set up a gaming table for?
Not enough.
There were games, and I can't say them all, but there was a page worth of games on there, and the table was expertly set up, I must say.
Yes, well done.
But not only that, their wedding cake had meeples on it.
Mm-hmm.
There were numerous speeches by certain people like the best man and the father and the mother of the bride, all of whom mentioned how crucial board gaming was in the establishment of this relationship, and obviously stuff that they do and love spending time together.
It was that and cats, really, wasn't
pretty
it?
Pretty much. Now, it must be said that Orgy, as a collective, are the kind of couple who will bang out all of Pandemic Season 1 Legacy in 2 days.
That's right.
Yeah. Good luck to them.
Yep.
It's the joy of having a best friend right there who loves game and they clearly don't get out much.
Or hang on, I have to mention.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of weddings, they have a guest book because they want you to write nice things in it.
Which no one ever does because they go, whatever.
So Oren and Georgie didn't have a guest book.
No.
They had a guest Carcassonne set.
Carcassonne.
Yep.
Not just Carcassonne.
Yes.
But Winter Carcassonne. Because
why is that?
Because their surname, Oren's surname, and now Georgie's surname, is Winter.
Ah, that's all connected.
And so what you had to do is you had to, each person in the wedding had to tick their name off a list because Georgie like lists.
Yes.
Take a Carcassonne piece, put it on the board, and they had little bits of blue tack there for you, and then write your name and write a nice note, or like, I drew a little picture, I did some little stick figures on mine because I had a city picture.
Wasn't a penis?
No.
Maybe that was me who did the picture on your card.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Bastard. I simply wrote Leon and hello.
I drew, mine was a city piece, so I got some little stick figures and drew them in there, getting water up a well and saying hello to Oren and Georgie. But, like, how classic was that? And then the funniest thing was I saw Georgie about two-thirds away through the night coming along and moving all the pieces. people had just stuck down and had no clue.
Yeah, they attempted to do the right thing and it just didn't work out halfway.
No, but that was really, really cool.
That was
very
brilliant.
Engaging.
I thought that was really brilliant.
Now, not only that, but the thing that probably impressed me the most is how guests were able to find out where the hell they were sitting. Now, a room full of 70 people with a whole bunch of round tables, unless you're in the bridal party, you generally don't know where the hell you're going to sit. So a little tip there for anyone who plans on getting married, loves board games, and clearly has some time on their hands, what this couple did was create three personalized Guess Who boards. They managed to do some Facebook stalking, presumably, and get cartoon versions of every guest put into the Guess Who, and your job as an attendee was to find your face, flip it down, and on the back was your table location. Mm. It was awesome.
That was brilliant. That was really brilliant. And, like, my partner, Sarah, who's sort of new on the scene and thought, oh, I saw some pictures there, but I won't be there. Like, everyone was there.
Correct.
And everybody also got their own special custom dice as well.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
That's not
a wedding favour.
No, that's
not all. Now, Leon, talk about upside down frowns that have been turned upside down, because that is a frown. We've been doing this show for nearly 199 completed episodes, and this time next week we'll be somewhere through 200.
We're in our fifth year.
And
a long time.
And how many games have the Dice Men been in? Like, how many special promos have we had because of our amazing influence on the tabletop hobby?
Well, not for the want of trying.
Yeah, we ask a lot of people.
We do. I think it's around. I mean, if we
it's
round,
a round number. If we it's round, definitely a round
if
number.
If we round it up and carry at least the one or the two, it's about zero.
It's about exactly zero.
Yeah.
Now, who wants to talk through the game that we, as attendees, all got?
Now, the bitterness aside, this is a brilliant idea.
It's
great. And when I first saw this, I went, "That is one of the coolest things I've ever seen."
Yeah. So we've had friends of the show, Terry and Merrin, on before. Now, they sort of planted the seed for a lot of people, because I think it was Terry got a signature promotional card for, is it Last Wheel or some other game?
Yeah, Last Wheel.
For Merrin as part of his proposal to her.
Ah.
But Georgie and Oren have taken it next level. And on the table, for every couple or for every attendee, every single person got a personalised Georgie and Oren version of Love Letter.
It was so cute.
Aww.
Yes, it was. So obviously, instead of having the king and the princess and stuff, they had those two. And then the
bride cats, instead of the princess.
And they had the cats there. They were one of them. And
and the guests were like the soldiers.
Yes.
I thought we could.
Well, I thought that as well. I thought, we'll be the guest then, because they've already got our cartoon-like faces on the guest suit and everything else. Just generic just random guests.
Some people.
Yeah.
But, as most of you probably see on Facebook, my wife, my bloody dice wife, who was one of the bridesmaids, made it onto one of the love letter cards.
Exactly.
So she, the first official dice person to make it onto a promo, is my wife, who hasn't actually been on the bloody show. Just mentioned several times.
But that is such a cool thing that everyone gets to take away. I've actually brought it tonight, should we decide to play it. But it's going to be one of those keepsakes that you remember, and it's so cool.
When you think about it, like, it's like, oh, dude, what a brilliant idea. But the fact they did it, the fact they got that custom art made, and, of course, that was one of the themes throughout the night was the invitation had that sort of the cartoony art. The love letter had the cartoony art. The
Guess Who
games had the cartoony art. So they've made really great use of the fact that they went to all that effort to get that done.
Yeah. So, look, I just want to say it was a fantastic night. I think the bride and groom hopefully had a great night, and all the guests certainly did. Now, this gaming table...
Mainly because of us, guys.
Well,
let's not muck around.
Look, you know, we had our little part to play, but it was all about Georgie and Oren, and we have to keep saying that.
Although people kept trying to thank us all the time. It was so difficult and awkward, but what are you going to do?
Exactly. Now, they did also have the shoe game, which was this game that the bride and groom sit back to back. They each grab one of each other's shoes so that they're holding a shoe of their own and a shoe of their now husband or wife. And then we got randoms from the audience to just shout out questions and try and embarrass them, really.
Yeah.
Like, whose farts are the stinkiest?
Yeah.
Or who does really weird stuff more than the other person?
Or who's the real power in when you're playing cooperative games?
Exactly. And that filled in a good couple of, you know, 10 minutes or so where we were able to ask it. And it was great that, again, the audience was able to ask their very weird and very personalised kind of questions.
Talk about audience participation.
We love it. But then this gaming table, now, it just wouldn't go away. It was right there. It had millions of games. I tell a lie, it probably had about 50 different games on it, all of which were nice and simple. Some examples would be Sushi Go, Cash and Guns, Blueprints, Hey, That's My Fish, Mr. Jack Pocket, Dr. Jack Pocket, Avalon, Monikers, Suro, Happy Salmon, Zombie Dice, Red 7. Then your more traditional games like some cards, plenty of decks of cards. You had Pickup Sticks, you had Yahtzee, you had Jenga. And then there was even a Monopoly board. Now, apart from you or me, Leon, did you see anyone else pick up Monopoly?
Sadly, no, because they would have been in for quite a bit of a treat.
So, yes, the joy of this was you picked up Monopoly, you opened the box, and inside was a very simple post-it note that said, You think we'd have Monopoly at our wedding? And that is a sign of a true gamer wedding right there. So that's all. I want to say out there for everyone in Radioland, congratulations, Orgy, for getting married. We're all really happy and we're very proud that you were able to add us to some of the festivities, but also just make it such a loving board gaming night as well.
Now, Garth, you did let it slide the temperature.
Yes.
So we are here in Tasmania. We talked about, you know, the winter carcass on and that Oren and Georgie are the king and queen of winter. Winter is always coming now in Tasmania.
Well, I think this week after after the wedding it probably is.
But let's not forget how bloody hot it was.
It was stinking.
It was like 36 degrees, no breeze, still as pond, and it continued to be that temperature until about 9 o'clock at night.
And we were all suited and booted. I was dressed head to toe in black, shockingly enough.
Oh, my goodness.
And look, all we had to ease the pain was lots of alcohol and food and good company. But living in Tasmania and complaining about the heat, I don't think we're going to get much sympathy there. So look, let's throw to a song because, as luck would have it, Mark has got some ways for us to all spend our money on another Kickstarter update. So we are the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thank you, Area 52, and we will be back in a moment. So that was Black Cab with Breakout.
That was Black Cab with Breakout.
Thanks, Leon, for doing that outro. That was seamless.
I was sending a message. Anyway, on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. Go give them all the money and stuff because they is nice folk and they have nerdy stuff.
Now,
what?
Don't spend all your money at Area 52.
No, you've got to spend them digital dollars.
You can spend
too.
All your cash monies there, but save your digi dollars
for
Kickstarter because I thought, you know, it started off with a bang last show, which was now
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, where I talked for about half an hour about Kickstarter.
Yeah, we all got a bit sick of that.
Well, I got more.
Oh, God.
Now, but before I get into it, though, a little bit of...
Oh, is this about Leon and I?
No.
On something else a couple of nights ago?
Oh, yes.
I wasn't going to mention that, but...
We probably should.
I guess I should. So, of course... It never fails, or in fact, it's failed twice now, that when we get a call, because we are board game celebrities here in our local town, that someone on some... government-owned media wants to talk about board games. They call up and say, hey, are you guys free to come and talk on local ABC radio about board games?
Yeah, and can you
I'm
come
out
in an hour?
Town again?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd like you to be there right now.
Yeah, they're big fans of that.
So,
right,
you guys were on, when was that?
Two nights ago. Yeah, Tuesday night. Because we were doing our Tuesday night games.
For about half an hour or so, you guys talked about modern board games and how, you know, we've moved from things like Cribbage and Monopoly to modern board games.
Yes.
On ABC local evening radio. Now, we will post a link to this on Facebook so people can listen and actually find that we're not making this up. You were actually on local real radio. Not that... What we're doing right now live to air in Hobart on Edge Radio is not real radio.
No, and you think we sound professional now. You should see what happens when we actually try a bit.
Their studio is sexy.
Yeah.
They even have a producer who just does all the buttons for them. So that's great. I mean, I get the benefit of being able to mute you guys when I'm pushing the buttons, which I like, but they had a person whose job was just to do that.
It's all a bit groaned up.
I know. So, look, we were very lucky, and Firas, the host who asked us to be on, was a lovely guy. And, yeah, we talked about a bit of the history of board games and the history of card games, and he had only just been introduced to games like Catan and games like Cards Against Humanity and Cribbage that he'd only played that very morning. So he's one of many people who... A week ago, when we would have said we play board games, would have said, you mean like Monopoly? Yeah. But now, due to some expert opinions, he's able to know that little bit more and share it with the wider ABC community.
There you go.
We even had a caller text in and say, My family plays Scrabble.
To which we said, play paperback, it's better.
We did. Anyway.
We do.
Enough awesome. About okay, us now, and being on a different
now
and slightly
some
better
real
radio show.
News.
Oh, yes.
So, the behemoth known as the Asmodee Group that is slowly eating the entire world of board games has eaten another morsel in that they've entered into an exclusive discussion to acquire the Polish distributor and publisher Rebel SP.
Now, the Rebels have gone down now.
Well, the thing that some people may not realise is that Rebel and Asmodee have had a very close deal being partners in a lot of projects over 10 years. And I think Asmodee being primarily a French-based company but now having a massive share in the US games market, they have handled a lot of the distribution for Rebel's non-Polish-speaking countries. But now I guess it's a lot more formal. The Asmodee Group CEO, Stefan Carville, said, "We are delighted to establish a deeper partnership with Rebel and strengthen our position in Poland."
And we wonder why they're the one company you want nothing to do
with. That's right. So Rebel and Asmodee have been partners for more than 10 years, and this next step will allow us to bring our board games and those of our publishing partners to a new level in Poland. Now, what I didn't realise, Poland is the fastest growing board game market in Europe.
Wow.
Now, you know, you've got Germany there, you've got France, you've got UK. Poland is blowing them all away, primarily because of some of the massive work being done by Rebel.
Yeah. K2. Seriously.
Yeah.
Best game ever, Mark. You should try it.
So it was founded in 2003 by Piotr Katnik. They also own the largest online board game shop in Poland. So Asmodee taken over another branch of board games. It's got to be us soon, surely. We're standing by waiting for the call.
Next thing, us and Area 52 will all be under the umbrella.
That's fine.
Which is fine.
It gets us paid.
Umbrella has money in it. It's fine.
Under the tentacles.
We promise we're not sellouts until we actually get offered money.
Correct. All right.
Okay.
Any other news, or is it just now cash money time? All right, let's go.
So I would like to congratulate a couple of the little Aussie Kickstarters that I mentioned last week. The 28 mil... Unarmored Marine squads.
Oh, the guys in dead jockstraps.
Yes, right.
Yeah, okay.
It's almost finished. It's got 4 days to go, but they've now raised over 4,000, where they're only after a bit over 1,000, so they've done really well. And the Andice, the ancient dice that you guys poo-pooed,
correct,
has raised over 12,000. That's still got 6 days to go. So you can still check out those last two if this podcast comes out in time. But a couple of new Aussie Kickstarters. Ascendant Destiny is a highly flexible fantasy role-playing game. And by flexible, it's skill-based, not class-based. So if you want to be a priest who punches people in the face and stabs people and steals from people, you can do that.
Well, I've always wanted to be that person.
It's by Christopher Fielder, who's a young paramedic from Melbourne, believe it or not. Look, it's only just launched. It's about 40%, so it's got a bit over 2,000 of its 5,000K target with 22 days to go. It's only $15 for a PDF copy or $35 for the hardcover book. So if you're into your role-playing and you're looking for something a little bit different in your high fantasy world, check out Ascendant Destiny. Now, I've got a couple of others. I'm going to put them under the Aussie bracket.
Okay.
They've all got links, some tenuous, some not so tenuous.
Oh, God.
Show and Tile by Jelly Bean Games. Now, Jelly Bean Games, of course, is...
those scumbags.
Peter C. Haywood, the guy with the blue beard. He's running the show, but good friend of the show, Tanya Walker, she's their art guru, designer, person.
As art director.
Yeah. And she has done the art for this game, Show and Tile. Now, first you might look at it and go, wow, she can make triangles and stuff good.
I was going to say, she threw some stuff at a board and gone, yep, new game for us.
Is she making tenugrams?
For the love of...
Anyway,
this is... Your turn now, Leon, for a pun.
This is really like Pictionary, but instead of where you get a card and it says draw a picture of a dinosaur, instead of using your pen and a dry erase marker or something, you're using these little tangrammy type or Tanya Grammy, type shapes of diamonds and triangles and squares, oh my, in all different bright colours to make your picture.
You make different shapes like a pen, Tanya, angle.
Damn it!
No, okay, you have to try.
You knew
again.
What I was going for, though.
So, look, it's very bright, all bright colours. It's very colourblind friendly because what a lot of people don't know, of course, is Tanya, the art designer, is actually colourblind, one of the various varieties of colourblind.
I knew she had some special skills, now she has more.
Yeah, so it's colourblind friendly. Now, they've raised, it's only been on one day. They've raised over 50% already after the first day. Now, here's my one little downer on this is it's only $29 US for the game, which is awesome.
All right, this sounds like a butt.
But it's $25 for shipping to Australia.
Oh.
Because while I'm taking claim for them being Australian, of course, Jellybean Games is, even though Peter Hayward is Australian living in America, it's American-based.
Oh, they've got some splaining to do.
So, these roots.
Look, it does make it very difficult to buy when it's almost double the price to ship it. But anyway, it's well worth a check. So that's Show and Tile. And I'll also claim as Australian, because the designers certainly are, Polyhero Dice. We've talked about these a couple of times. They've got the, I was almost going to say the Rouge edition. The Rogue edition.
Oh, the Rogue one. The Star Wars one.
No. Ah. Rogue as in stabbity stab, poisony poison, sneaky sneak.
Okay.
Rogue. So Dan and Greg May, two brothers, they've bought out the Rogue edition. You've got a loot bag, a powder keg, a dagger, even a D4 that's a grappling hook. So you've got all funny-shaped little dice. It's got 7 days to go. It's over 300% funded. So they're just going gangbusters with these Polyhero dice.
So that show-and-tell game, it is, since they're not all Australians, the link to Australia is only Tanya Gently.
Oh, come on! I had to Google how to spell it. It works!
No.
Anyway, Polyhero dice.
You've got about
rogue,
5 minutes, Leon, to tell you.
Set. It's $18. I think the shipping is announced at the end of the campaign, but it may even be free to Australia. Very, very affordable, the Polyhero Dice. And then another more than tenuous link to Australia is the Scarlet Pimpernel Signature Edition.
Tenuous link.
With art by Ian O'Toole, very good friend of the show, designed by Brian Kelly. Look, what I love about this is there's almost more love given to Ian O'Toole than there is to Brian Kelly in this Kickstarter because they're making such a big deal now. Ian O'Toole is Mr. Big Deal in board game art with all the Vital Lacerda games he's been doing and a whole lot of others. This one has an exclusive first player marker of a guillotine.
Hey.
So sweet. It's $75 US shipping. $75 US for the signature edition with all the deluxe little bits. The shipping is $26.
Okay.
So it costs the same to ship this whole board game with lots of heavy bits as it does to ship Show and Tile. Anyway, I love it. Couple more quick ones that have no Australian links at all.
Okay.
So Nemesis, I talked about it before. It's
Don't
now hit.
Back out, Mark.
I'm not going to.
Good.
It's now hit over 3.5 million Australian or 2 million poons, about 4,000% funded and still got 2 days to go.
And hasn't been sued yet. Well done.
U-Boat, the board game, which
U-boot.
You have backed, Garth.
Yeah,
the 3D submarine. They have raised over almost 500,000 poons. Of their goal was only 65,000 poons. And that one's still got 13 days to go, so check that one out. Rambo, the board game.
Mm.
Now, you know, some licensors, like our good friends at Rule and Make with their Terminator game that couldn't get it up.
Keep
not
going.
Saying anything about them personally. Rambo, the game, who would have thought? They're already 150% funded with 21 days to go. $60 US for this game. It's got minis.
That's
I don't know. I don't know. Planet Apocalypse by Sandy Peterson. He designed Cthulhu Wars. He was one of the key designers of the Doom video game. He knows his horror stuff.
Yeah.
So this is a post-apocalyptic co-op strategy mini game. Some of the minis are up to 104 millimetres, which, given it's a 28 mil scale, so in other words, your monster is four times as big as your people. It's $99 for the game, and shipping this is free to Australia.
Wowzers.
Okay.
Nice.
Does it come with a free Show and Tile copy?
No?
Okay.
And finally, Tiny Epic Zombies by yes. Gamelan Games and all their Tiny Epic games. Here's another one. These guys have raised almost $800,000 on this one.
I am one of the backers.
And what do they call their meeples?
So,
item meeples? Well, or
no, what it yes. has, it has wooden meeples that have little holes in their arms that you can then plug in the item meeples, which are your chainsaw,
yeah,
your barbed wire wrapped baseball bat, and all these other little things that you need to fight the zombies.
Of course I back this. They call me Tiny Epic Leon. Well, all the ladies do.
Yeah,
anyway.
They do. That's right.
Hang on.
This one's only $25 for the game, $12 shipping for the deluxe version with some even more bonus item meeple equipment. That's about all I've got.
Yeah. All right, well, that's pretty good.
There's a lot more coming on Kickstarter soon. Obviously, Batman's coming soon.
There's a couple of good Australian ones coming up in the next month that we might have a few ins on that we might talk about soon.
Yes, but there you go. Play one. Well, thank you very much for that, Mark. I'm glad I've already cashed in my money on U-Boot because it looks amazing. Look, that's episode 199.
In the can.
But stay tuned for what will be an epic episode 200. We can't give much away, let's be honest about that. But all I can say is it will be on the radio this time next week, starting at 7 p.m. on a Thursday for episode 200. Are you excited, lads?
Oh, I'm so excited.
Look at Leon, he's already checking his phone.
I'm Googling the word Tanya and then trying to put letters on the end of it to try and...
All right, well, you've got a week, Leon, so we have been the Dice Men Cometh. Thanks again, Area 52, for all your continued sponsorship. We're going to be out of here and go and play a couple of games, but we will be back again next week to talk more games and celebrate 200 episodes. That's a pretty good achievement. So we're out of here now. Bye.
So bye-bye. A Cuban composer called Tanya Leon.
This has been another episode of the Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52. Offering comics, books, card games and board games for the whole family. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart or online at area52.com.au. And find us online at thedicemencometh.com.